We are Rogue Media Sports.
It's one thing falling in love with a house, picturing yourself moving in and calling it home, and quite another navigating the world of price negotiating, mortgage lenders, and finding the budget that works best for you. An agent who's a Realtor can make understanding that world easier. Realtors have the expertise, access to proprietary data, and tools to help you get from imagining living somewhere to actually doing it. That's the kind of help we can provide. Because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
It is the Doomsday Podcast, and well, we're back to full strength. Ed Werder, as always. You'll hear from Glenn Stretch Smith and his grades, and Stretch was in a little bit better mood after this performance from the Cowboys. Ed, it's great to visit with you, and it's especially, I almost don't know, I've almost forgotten how to do this when the Cowboys win. It's been so long, and believe it or not, I mean, you texted me earlier today, you said, well, this becomes a bigger game, and lo and behold, even though I thought even till the end when they were in that fourth and sixth spot, I thought, yeah, they're going to find a way to lose this game. They won it, and if they aren't right in the middle of a playoff race now.
Yeah, you know, Mike McCarthy said after the game that it was an excellent win, that the players damn well earned it. And he said now they have to do something with this opportunity that they've created. And if you look at what happened in the NFC East today, Washington and Dallas won, Philadelphia lost. This is the first week this season where NFC East teams have posted a winning record. And it's just the second time where multiple teams in the division won a game in the same week. So the Cowboys and Washington winning, coupled with the Eagles losing, leaves all four teams in the NFC East having three wins. But of course, the Eagles have one fewer loss because they had a tie. And so the Cowboys go into their game. Unbelievably, the Cowboys go into their game on Thanksgiving Day against Washington. The winner of that game will be 4-7 and in first place in the NFC East.
It's hard to believe. And the Washington football team did find a way today. And, of course, the Eagles did what the Eagles continue to do. They found a way to lose 22-17 to the Browns, and the Cowboys getting ready for this first-place showdown on Thanksgiving. I mean, I can barely say it with a straight face. It is time for the Doomsday Podcast. Chris Gross, our excellent producer from Frito Nation Productions, please play the music, sir. All right, it is doomsday time, and the season, which we had pretty much had become sort of a laughing stock, and who knows where this thing is headed, but as we were just discussing, the Cowboys find a way to win on the road against a team, Ed, that, I mean, let's not act like the Vikings are great by any stretch of the imagination, but a team that was climbing its way back toward 500, came in at 4-5, had won three straight games, and obviously, as we saw today, have a prolific offense, have the best running back in all of the NFL. I mean, I guess you could make some argument, but I think this is the best one. And the Cowboys go in there and they find a way to win that game. And Ed, it's I mean, I don't want to overdo this, but we do have a completely sort of different feeling about the trajectory of this season right now.
Well, I think going into the bye week, you know, they were coming off that game against Pittsburgh that they had a lot of chances to win, and Pittsburgh's still the only undefeated team in the NFL. And the Cowboys gave themselves a chance to win the game, and they failed. But I thought they acquitted themselves well. You know, they eliminated a lot of the mistakes. The turnovers still hurt them in that game, but they played hard. There was an intensity. And today, I think the intensity became sort of a ferocity at many times, especially on the defensive side of the ball. You know, they had a couple of goal line hits on Dalvin Cook. Donovan Wilson created two turnovers, stealing the ball on a sack from Kirk Cousins and lighting up Dalvin Cook coming across the middle, causing a fumble that the Cowboys recovered. So they actually scored twice off turnovers in the first half, creating opportunities that we have not seen them do for themselves very often. And then on the offensive side of the ball, I mean, I think there were a lot of questions about whether Andy Dalton was the right call here at quarterback. I mean, you know, Mike McCarthy was steadfast. Jerry Jones, you know, called him the best backup quarterback they've had in his 30 years of owning the team. And I think Dalton was under some pressure to live up to that today, because the Cowboys' two worst defeats based on scoring margin going into this game were against the Cardinals and Washington by 18 and 22 points. And those were the only other two games that Dalton had started. And so I think Dalton had a lot to prove today, and he did. Now he threw the go-ahead touchdown pass with, what, 1:37 left, but he almost got picked on the play right before that. He hit the defensive back right in the chest. He just had the good fortune of the defensive back not catching the ball. But I thought, you know, Mike McCarthy obviously used the bye week to reconfigure the offensive line. They relented on their stubbornness about moving their best offensive lineman, Zach Martin, from right guard to right tackle. They started him there. First time in his 7-year NFL career, he started there. They had Joe Looney back, a veteran at center. I think all of that stabilized everything around Dalton. He was only pressured four times in 34 dropbacks. And then, of course, the milestone achievement has finally occurred. Ezekiel Elliott finally has a 100-yard rushing game with Mike McCarthy as the head coach. But so I thought there were a lot of positives, and whether they can sustain it and continue to improve from this point forward. If they do, I think they win the division.
You know, it was funny to hear the analyst, I believe that was Jonathan Vilma, like gushing about how great this is. At times he would say, this is a good team. I'm thinking, no, this is not a good team. And he was talking about how great the play calling was. It is interesting, you know, sometimes to Kellen is calling the plays, but the head coach has the huge laminated chart himself. And so I do think sometimes people find themselves describing it as the two of them calling plays, which who knows exactly how much influence McCarthy has. But Ed, the point I'm wanting to make is that it did seem more imaginative, and maybe it's because they just finally felt comfortable. I don't know what, but I mean, even on that 2-point conversion, to have a play set up where Zeke then options the ball, I mean, that looked like something Andy Reid and the Chiefs do. Okay, that does not really look – the Cowboys' most imaginative thing they've done in the past year or so was the jet sweep. And they were using, like, Jordan Lewis on the jet sweep at one point a year ago. And so I just thought overall the balance and the play calling, and we saw some of that happen with Garrett Gilbert against the Steelers, but it certainly carried over into this ball game.
Well, I think it's, you know, in defense of Kellen Moore, who I think has established himself in the league very early on in his career as a very creative play caller. I think he's good at what he does. I mean, they were the most dynamic offense in football, or one of the top three, at least, in terms of scoring average. You know, they were averaging 32 points a game when they had Dak Prescott playing quarterback, and that dropped all the way down to 10 points a game as they played three different quarterbacks over that four-game span. But today they got it back up to 31 points. And I think it's hard to be creative when you have a different quarterback every week, you know? And they had, what, four different quarterbacks in a five-week stretch. Today, this offensive line we just talked about, that's their seventh different starting offensive line combination. So I think when there's no continuity in terms of your personnel at so many key positions, I think it becomes difficult. I mean, they do have quality wide receivers, and they do have quality running backs, and they were finally able to have a stable enough situation on the offensive line and a quarterback to bring that to the game. And I thought for the most part, they took advantage of that. I mean, there were periods of time where I was wondering, hey, where's Amari Cooper? You know, how does this $20 million wide receiver disappear on such a consistent basis? And then they threw to him on fourth down on their game winning touchdown drive. Obviously, the defense still has huge problems in the back end. And I don't know that they can fix those. I think the only way they can fix that is with the pass rush. And I'm not sure that they can consistently do that rushing four. But I think the offense looked a lot better. I just thought that the team played. I thought the players competed harder than probably in any other game we've seen. And that makes two in a row where we can say that.
Yeah, that was an interesting comment you made earlier about the – it's the old writer and you coming out using such strong language. Nothing foul, but you said the ferocity that they – it bordered on almost that. And I think, you know, the safety, Donovan Wilson, you know, he may have set the tone. First of all, I don't think anybody watching that game, the announcers, like, we saw him running the other way, but nobody had realized – he had yanked that ball away from Cousins. That ends up being a huge play. They go in and get the touchdown. And then the play on Cook. And obviously, Cook's a tough dude because he came back and played well in the second half. But, I mean, to have a guy out in the open field like that turns it upfield. And I mean, he just absolutely – I mean, that was an old-time sort of hit that, you know, we think of when we think of the Steelers and the Ravens. That was, yeah. I don't always think about that with the Cowboys, to your point. And so he did kind of set the tone there, and there was a physicality that hasn't always been there. And I would also say Van Der Esch, down there around the goal line did some of that and helped set the tone for that ball game.
Well, yeah. And I think you do, that sense of physicality comes from the defense, right? And gets transferred to the offense. I mean, the Cowboys used to have an offense that imposed its will and punished opponents with the offensive line and the running game, but that's really not the way the game's played much anymore, with very few exceptions. The Baltimore Ravens play it that way. The Tennessee Titans play it that way. The Cowboys played it that way until Mike McCarthy took over and made the offense go through the quarterback. But I think the other important thing that they were able to do here, really on both sides of the ball, was they were able to stay in the game. They were able to keep the game close. Even when they fell behind, you know, they were able to respond. And so they were able to play the game the way they wanted to play the game. They didn't get forced into being a one-dimensional offensive team like we've seen far too often. They were able to keep running the football. They got the big run from, you know, Tony Pollard, the 42-yard touchdown run. Elliott had some runs of 15 plus yards in the game. And so they were able to stick to their game plan and use their personnel in the way that they wanted to. In the passing game, they spread it around pretty well. Obviously the CeeDee Lamb catch was a fantastic effort by him, and just demonstrated why, when a guy with that skill set is available at 17, you don't hesitate. You just take him and deal with the fallout later of having too many receivers. Geez, we wouldn't have paid Amari Cooper, you know, $100 million if we'd have known CeeDee Lamb was going to be available, but they did the right thing taking CeeDee Lamb, in my opinion. Obviously, you pay for it somewhere else, and that's on the defensive side of the ball. Kirk Cousins threw for 300 yards. Adam Thielen made a great one-handed touchdown catch. He had over 100 yards receiving. Dalvin Cook had over 100 yards rushing. But unlike last year, when they had so much to play for against the Vikings and played a very similar game, and they had Dak, they lost that game. They were able to hang in there with this team and come back and beat them ultimately. Now, I think you can safely argue that that Vikings defense was better than this group is. But still, it was an important game for them. If they don't win it, they're probably, for all intents and purposes, out in the division. And you can still argue whether winning is a good thing, because they started the game today with the third overall draft pick, and yet they were only a game and a half out of first place in their division. And that's a home playoff game if you win the division. So where are their interests best served? I don't know. But the coaches and the players are always going to try to win games. I just don't know where this effort has been all along. Where was this effort against the Browns? Where was this effort against Washington? Where was it against the Cardinals? You know, but for whatever reason, they seem to have finally bought in. Everybody understands what's expected of them. They know, they seem to understand what they needed to do within the scheme on defense. They're just not very good on defense, but they scored points, and that's the way they win.
Yeah, I would say so. You know, from a special team standpoint, Ed, they were fortunate. The Vikings player who got a little antsy out there and telling his punter hey, nobody's covering me out here. And he didn't properly get set on that play. That certainly would have kept that drive going for Minnesota. I think that was going to be about a 23-yard reception by that player. But yeah, you gotta have some good fortune in these games. And now the Cowboys have to turn around and get ready for that Thanksgiving battle. All right, Ed, we got more to talk about, but I'll tell you, let's do this right now. Let's hear from the man that joins us every week, the former Cowboys scout and coach, Glenn Stretch Smith. And Stretch, I know you and Ed have been doing this without me, not really behind my back, with my complete understanding of I've been on the bench with this injury, but other than the haircut you've been making fun of, I'm bounced back, doing a lot better. Pain meds seem to be working, holding up, and I'm getting stronger by the day. This is weird, Stretch, because and by the way, Ed is on a conference call with Mike McCarthy now. He'll be joining us back in a little bit. But, Stretch, I just wanted to say the most it's kind of weird. We haven't talked about a win in so long. You almost forget like what that feels like and what that even seems like. Let's start a little bit with the bigger picture, and let's start with the back end of that defense. I would say, and I know you're going to be a little rough on them, but I would say, Stretch, that at least to my eye, you at least have a playmaker back there in Donovan Wilson with the fumble caused on a hellacious hit on Dalvin Cook, and then, of course, the taking the ball away from Cousins. It is nice to finally see a playmaker back there.
Yeah, somebody that's flying around and looks like he, you know, he's in position, he's comfortable with what's going on. He's obviously understanding more of what they're wanting to do defensively. And I'm saying what they're wanting to do, what Mike Nolan is asking of these guys to do. So I'll agree with you. I mean, he was flying around the football field doing some things that we haven't seen done. The thing that still concerns me, and it's a huge concern, and it's concerned me all year, is the lack of man-to-man cover skills that Brown and Awuzie have. And I understand, you know, Brown's a six-round pick out of Purdue, but he's been here for a while. I mean, you've got to understand better leverage, better angles, better understanding of what guys are doing. I saw Gary Kubiak just come out in the second half and pretty much go at those guys. I mean, mm-hmm. If it wasn't for the last stop right there, which was a critical stop, and that really won the football game for them. I mean, they still hadn't stopped them in the second half yet, and I'm talking about throwing the football. So I'm still really concerned with this secondary, and I like the play that Jordan Lewis did make. He knew that, and that's what I'm talking about. He knew that if he stayed heavy inside, there was only one place that Thielen could break, and it was out. And when he broke out, you saw him cut the angle down, go underneath that, and kind of undercut that ball and almost tip that ball right there to really look in a good coverage position. It's something I don't see Awuzie and Brown doing. And the reason I don't understand that, when you've been in this defense and you understand those things, to still not understand how to take angles and what to do, it's maddening. And that really is, right now, that's the Achilles heel for what's going on with this defense, because I thought the front seven played well, but your secondary, fellas, let's don't try to perfume this tough situation, because they are not very good in the back end. I'll agree with you, Donovan Wilson made some big hits. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, they're playing some guy named Robinson who's just off the practice squad and having to get some playing time because, I mean, they just can't cover guys. So it's a hard watch because of what Wilson did and because of Jordan Lewis. I mean, that at least gives them a passing grade.
Okay, we are going to go at least a C there for the secondary. And, you know, the analyst, Vilma, I don't know if you noticed that, Stretch, he couldn't tell Lewis and Robinson apart. He kept saying it was Lewis when it was Robinson. Robinson was number 28. One thing I saw Robinson do on one of those plays when Cousins wanted to go out in the flat to Cook, he did come up there that one time and take that away, and that led to a good play by the defense. But you're right. I mean, the quarterback ended up with almost a perfect day, a perfect passer rating, although passer rating still doesn't take into account, apparently, when you fumble the ball. That was a huge play by Donovan Wilson. The rest of it, Stretch, Lawrence made some plays. What did you think the job they did on Dalvin Cook? He obviously had a good day, but it took him 27 rushes to put up his 125 yards. They were at least physical with him. He's a great back. And in fact, he may be the best back in the entire NFL right now.
Yeah, and I would agree with you. I mean, he's the best to me. I mean, you got Kamara, you've got him, you've got the Tennessee back. I mean, those are kind of the three guys that are in conversation. But when I look at Dalvin Cook, I think he is the best back in the league. And here's what I'm going to say from a general aspect of what's going on with this front six, if they're in nickel situations or seven, is that you're starting to see and reap the benefits of understanding what Vander Esch can do, which is chase the football sideline to sideline. And then if they decide to come up in there, I mean, that lick he laid on Cook down there on the goal line was as good a hit, and I'm talking about physical contact hit, that you will see. He stepped up and he attacked Dalvin Cook in the hole. You see that, and then you see him chase sideline to sideline, and you understand why they felt like they could implement this 3-4 defense, even though they really don't have 3-4 inside players. I'm talking about those heavy guys down inside there. But when you see what he can do, he makes Smith better. He makes Sean Lee better. I mean, he makes the entire defense better with what he can do. I am going to tell you this, too, is I think DeMarcus Lawrence looks healthy to me. Now, he didn't practice this week. I think they said he was had some sort of illness. But I think he's healthy. You see what he can do. You see what Gregory can do. I saw some good things out of Dorrance Armstrong. Now, I saw him not set the edge one time, and you can do that when you're still getting used to this defense. But front seven-wise, I mean, this defense for back-to-back weeks, being Pittsburgh, taking a week off, and now playing this week, has looked as good as they've looked all year, and definitely a winning grade for your front six or seven.
All right, winning grade for the front six or seven. Let's look over there, Stretch, if we could, on the offensive side of the ball. Let's start with the quarterback. I thought Dalton obviously made maybe that out throw he made on fourth and six, where Gladney was beat over there by Amari Cooper. It was a very clutch throw for him, but a pretty, other than that one interception across the middle. Now, of course, he could have gotten picked on that one down there near the goal line. That was scary when he was trying to target Schultz and he couldn't quite get through there. He kind of got caught up. And that thing almost got picked off. But I would say for the most part, it was, as you like to say, a workmanlike, pretty solid effort by the quarterback.
Yeah, I saw him miss. The thing that concerned me, he missed a fourth down throw to Wilson. He's got to get more accurate on some of his slants. The ball that he had picked to Dalton Schultz was a skinny that's behind Schultz, and it got intercepted. And then he overextended CD down there when they had when they got the helmet to helmet contact. He's got to be better at sticking the ball in guys' framework when you throw those underneath routes. But what I like about what he did was he checked out of some things. He was able to check into some runs. You can tell he's an experienced guy. I think that's exactly what they wanted. They, being the offensive staff, wanted the ability to have him show his experience and be able to check some plays and read some coverages. And so I thought he did that really, you know, pretty well. And so when you can get him or a quarterback functioning in an offense that can make plays for you. Now, I got aggravated at Gallup. Gallup dropped two balls. But then when you see the catch CeeDee Lamb made, and that was not a good throw. I mean, the ball should have been outside and to the left. But for him to contort his body and come back and make that catch was unbelievable. But when we talk about the quarterback, I thought he did what they asked him to do, which was go and play the game and run the football game, go manage the football game. And I thought he did a good job of that.
You know, on the running running back, and Ed and I have talked about this a little bit, but I mean, you finally had Zeke go for over 100 yards. That was a positive. And then stretch, it seems like they have realized that Pollard, certainly that change of pace, that he does have that home run ability, and to see him get out there and take that one to the house. I mean, that just does so much for an offense that has really struggled. That it seemed like an extremely positive sign for the Cowboys.
Yeah, and again, now the thing I'm going to point to is I think they played to Zeke's strengths. Run the football between the tackles. He got his yards hammering that ball inside. And there were a couple times when they brought Schultz back into the backfield and ran a two-back run for his longest run, I think, of the game was 16 yards when Andy moved Schultz inside and they ran a little ISO play up in there. So, yeah, I think that Zeke is a heck of a football player. I mean, you can tell what he can do from catching the football to getting that thing in the end zone. You see him in short yardage situations, be able to, you know, keep drive his feet, keep his feet going. And then, I mean, how about the play he made when they handed it to him? He ran down the line of scrimmage and pitched it for the 2-point conversion. I mean, I thought it was, as, you know, as nifty as I've seen. And so you combine that with Pollard. The only thing about Pollard, and I'm going to say this, and this could go on the special teams coach, but if the ball is in the end zone, would you quit bringing it out of the end zone? I mean, that's so – he got him stuck one time at the 12-yard line, bringing the ball 4 yards out in the end zone. It just doesn't make any sense to me, but he's a good player. I mean, he did some nice job. He did some nice things in pass protection. Pollard did. You know, usually that's kind of something that Zeke does. So, absolutely, you got a winning grade and a winning effort out of your backs.
And at receiver, I thought, you know, CD obviously made an incredible adjustment on that play you were talking about. Amari came up big later in the game. At least he kind of stayed with it. We've seen him fade from games, and he was able to kind of hang in there and keep playing throughout the game. I think I counted, Stretch, they threw to 9 different players in this game. So they really did spread it around a little bit, even got Blake Bell a touch or two, and then Schultz continues to be a nice weapon for the Cowboys. And some of that ingenuity you were just talking about, I thought that was a nice 2-point play that they had in their bag there. And then, of course, the one that slipped, you know, the big touchdown at the end that slipped Schultz free across. I mean, I just think they're this thing looks more imaginative than what we've seen in the past.
Yeah, I mean, you had Noah Brown make some catches. You had Wilson make some catches. But you're right, Matt. I mean, you know, I've been critical of the coaching staff. But in this game, offensively, as well a coached offensive scheme as I've seen since Mike McCarthy got here. I like that they moved Zach Martin to tackle. I put Connor McGovern in there. I mean, I've wondered, you know, where he is. And they've said from time to time that he's, you know, they've questioned how, you know, his really his football intelligence, but how smart do you have to be when you're inside with a guard with an all-pro tackle if you got the guy that just says, hey, I tell you what, go block that guy right there.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's what you saw them do. And so offensively, you know, you got an all-around winning grade for an offense that really came out and did some things well. They executed well. And then when they had, there were times, critical times in the game that they were able to convert, whether it was the 2-point conversion, whether it was on the fourth down, or whether it was on the big touchdown. So I thought that it was a well-devised game plan for what they wanted to do. And even on the throw to CD, they were able to attack that green grass out there and do some things that I felt like they thought they would get from a Mike Zimmer defense.
It's just interesting, you know, the last thing point I'll make to you, that Cam Irving false start, it does seem like in the past that would have just derailed them. That put them in a third and 12 situation. And yet instead of panicking, Stretch, they had that run in play that got about half the yardage back, and then it was fourth and manageable. And I thought that was I thought that showed some poise, at least in the play calling and in everything the offense was trying to accomplish.
Yeah, they knew they had two downs there, and they run that little inside zone. And you're right, got 6 yards, set it up in fourth and six, and then they were able to pick that up and get it. I mean, I agree with you. They were able to call the game, knowing, hey, we got it. We got two downs here to get 12 yards. We don't have to push the ball down the field. We don't have to get, you know, try if we could scheme somebody open. They ran the ball and then got back on the line of scrimmage and converted on fourth down. So all the way around, a really good job by Mike McCarthy, by Kellen Moore, you know, Joe Philbin, the offensive line coach. I thought the offensive line really played a good football game. So it was a well-played game and certainly got them, you know, back in the win column. And I mean, it's hard to say, but I mean, they're in the run to win this NFC East. And it's amazing if you think about it.
It is amazing. And all the teams now have 3 wins, Eagles slightly ahead with that tie. Stretch, I always appreciate it. Fun talking to you. And then people can watch you every Sunday night after these games on Channel 8. That's WFAA with Del Hanson and his crew. That's 10:30, Dale Hanson Sports Special, and always love having you on the Doomsday Podcast. Thank you, sir.
Hey, thank you. Get on with the Miller Lite, Matt. Get on with doing a little shout-out to our folks at Miller Lite.
Oh, and as you know, Stretch, I appreciate it. That was the perfect segue. As the original light beer, Miller Lite has always been there to bring people together through Miller time. Right now, enjoying Miller Lite with friends looks different to everyone. You might do it socially distant. You might do it through some form of a virtual type happy hour right now. It is the only beer of the Cowboys, Miller Lite 30-year partnership with the team dating back to 1991 when the team was still playing at Texas Stadium. And during the 2020 season, Miller Lite celebrating 60 years of Cowboys greatness. Pick up special marked packaging, Cowboys 60th anniversary imagery and logo at participating retailers. This holiday season, Miller Lite will celebrate a unique occasion with the Cowboys. As title sponsor of the iconic Thanksgiving Day game, Miller Lite and the Cowboys will produce new holiday knitwear, sweater, hats, socks, with proceeds to be donated to the Salvation Army. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories and 3.2 carbs per 12 ounces. Ed and I doing our thing. It's so good to be back together. And thanks for everybody. It's been so kind as I've rehabbed from a rough cycling accident. I'm now 3.5 weeks removed from surgery. And thanks for everybody that's inquired. And sadly, Ed, people sometimes they tell Meredith, they say that my wife, well, we know he must not be doing well because we don't see him tweeting. Well, we've had to explain. I've been locked out of Twitter for like 2 weeks. I got hacked. And I would say, Ed, your IT department at ESPN is a little better than my IT department. I have filed every report known to man, and 2 weeks later, I can't get on Twitter. But it's not for a lack of trying. All right, Ed, as we kind of say goodbye and wrap things up, Cowboys – obviously moved to 3 wins. Now everybody has 3 wins. Everybody's 3-7 except the Eagles, who are 3-6-1 with that one tie. Now, Ed, you had some interesting notes that had to do with sort of the football power index and those types of things the rest of this season and how it breaks down as we sit here this evening with Dallas getting ready to play the Redskins on Thanksgiving. How does this all shape out as we start to kind of look to the rest of the season?
Well, the first thing before I get to that football predictive index that you mentioned, whoever wins the NFC East will join the 2014 Panthers as just the second team to start 3-6-1 and or worse and make the playoffs. So the breakdown of the division, as you were mentioning, in terms of chances to win the division, the Eagles have a 46% chance to win the division, according to this ESPN FPI metric. The Giants have a 26% chance. Washington has a 17% chance. And Dallas has a 10% chance. Dallas still has the worst chance of any of the four teams in the division, which is surprising for two reasons. One is the Cowboys have the easiest remaining schedule of any of those teams. And the Eagles have to overcome Carson Wentz, and nobody else does. I mean, Carson Wentz has what, 14? Carson Wentz has as many interceptions through 10 games. I think it's 14. He has as many interceptions through 10 games as he had in his previous 27 games combined. That's how poorly that quarterback is playing. Obviously, the Giants still have their number one quarterback. Washington is now got Alex Smith coming off his very first a victory as a starting quarterback since he suffered that terrible fractured leg and all the surgeries that came with that. The Cowboys are back to their number two quarterback after playing everybody on the roster who's ever thought about throwing a pass as a starting quarterback. But it'll be interesting to see how this whole thing plays out. I think one of the other ways to measure the quality of football teams that's, you know, kind of generally accepted as a demonstration of how one compares to the other in terms of strength is the point differential. How many points have they scored versus how many points that they've allowed? And the Cowboys, if you look at the teams in the division, are by far the worst in that regard. Their point differential is minus 83. And maybe that's not surprising given that they're the only team in the division that started four different quarterbacks, but it's abysmal. And obviously that reflects the fact they've been blown out of a lot of games, reflects the fact that they've given up an enormous number of points still, even as they become more competitive these last 2 weeks.
You know, Ed, as you were saying in providing all that helpful information, you know, I was really taking a peek at the rest of the schedule for the Cowboys. And to your point, I would say, because some of these games we go, oh, you go on the road, you know, going on the road doesn't really mean what it usually means. They do have to go to the Ravens. Again, that's other than some ugly weather that they could experience there in early December. The Ravens game, and of course, the Ravens got beat today to fall to 6-4. They're not playing particularly well, so I don't know if we can just mark that automatically down as a loss. But that's the toughest game they have the rest of the season.
Yeah, they still play Cincinnati, and Cincinnati lost Joe Burrow today, the sensational rookie who, you know, who knows how many yards he might have thrown for against this defense. they still play the Giants, who they easily could have lost to here not that long ago. They have the Eagles here right after Christmas, I believe. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I agree. I think the Ravens is by far the most challenging game, and that's their game after Thanksgiving. But they're fortunate in that that's another Thursday game, so they have a full week to prepare for that game, and then they get another mini bye again after that.
Yeah, that is interesting. They do have the Niners coming in before Christmas, and Niners have been really an up-and-down team this year and have had all sorts of issues as far as injuries and all of that. So it's not the Niners team we would have been thinking about last year. So obviously there's some chances to I'll dig into that, Ed, for us for next week. I'll study this FPI. And I'll have a little bit better explanation for why they're only at 10%. Okay, I'll do some research.
Maybe it'll change tomorrow after this resounding, thrilling victory. But that's where it stands at the moment. And I did finally, I was looking. I knew I had this information. The point differential totals that I mentioned for each team. Only memorizing the Cowboys because it was so horrendous. The Eagles are minus 34. The Giants are minus 41. Washington is only minus 27, and Dallas is minus 83. So but maybe that's where their 10% comes in.
They're right in the thick of things.
Unbelievably.
Yeah, it is. Well, I want to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving this weekend. Are you going to be, have you got your assignment? Are you going to be, will you be spending like you normally have in the past? Will you be spending your Thanksgiving out at AT&T Stadium?
Well, you know, you would think so, given the magnitude of this game, now that it's an epic clash with 2-3-7 teams, that one of which will leave the building in first place alone in the division till at least until the Eagles play, and the Eagles will retake the lead if they win their game. But I think we have miscalculated grossly, because I'm not assigned the game. We aren't planning to cover the game. Part of it, I think, is because the two teams are not very good, as you might imagine. And the other part of it is there's just not a lot of programming right now for us to contribute to on ESPN, given the pandemic and the way things have been scaled back by our network.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, you know what? That'll just free you up for even more great commentary as you and I, after we have our Thanksgiving spreads, our socially distant Thanksgivings, we will be on the Zoom. Although, Ed, I was very upset you did not turn on your video tonight. I have presented, even though in my strange state that I'm in.
I didn't realize that wasn't on.
No,
oh, here we go.
No,
here.
I never.
I should have a look.
Oh, okay. Oh, look, you've got a nice little hoodie on there.
I know.
I
got a stand for my iPad now, and so you're not looking up my nose anymore. And you can see my background that I use on television. This incredible photograph, a painting of the triplets, Troy, Emmett, and Michael.
Mm-hmm. Ron St. Angelo.
That was donated to me by Ron St. Angelo, the former Cowboys photographer. Over here we have an award that I won, Roger Goodell autographed football, and then a kind of a 1960s era Cowboys helmet back on the other side of me. You've probably seen it on TV before, but this is because of this new investment I made in this iPad stand. You can now see it, or you can. I don't think our audience gets to see our video.
No, we have that capability of putting a video out there. In fact, Frito was asking me about that. Frito's getting better, by the way. Frito Nation Productions, he is now in a rehab facility, and he's making great progress, and he puts a lot of updates on Facebook, and so I do think he is making some progress. So that's good news as we continue to bounce back.
It's on his physical therapy, right? I mean, in terms of rehab, it's physical therapy oriented. He's had a medical issue. We don't want anybody to think the wrong thing when you say you went to a rehab facility.
Oh, okay. I thought we had been very clear.
I just think you can't say certain things enough times.
Okay. He's not in rehab for a drinking issue or anything. He's fine. He's not dependency. He had a medical issue. Okay, Ed, thank you for clarifying that. Ed,
I'm also the resident attorney looking out for the well-being of the Doomsday Podcast.
I appreciate that. Although I'm the only one of us that went to law school, although I didn't quite make it across the finish line. It's been great. Thanks to Chris Groves, does a very good job for us. A solid producer, has taken over a lot of Frito's responsibilities, and we really appreciate him. Ed, it's time to say goodnight. Go ahead and do the honors.
Good night, everybody in North Texas and around Cowboys Nation, and Frito, keep making that progress, buddy.
Keep swinging that axe. What is that thing called?
Keep pounding.
All right. Good night, everybody. This has been the Doomsday Podcast.
Is this house a good price compared to others in the area? Are prices going up or down? If I don't make an offer right this very moment, will I miss my chance?
These are just some of the questions a home buyer might ask. And these are the sorts of questions an agent who is a Realtor can help answer. Because Realtors have the expertise, data, and access to specialty training to help you navigate the process of buying a home. They provide support, guidance, and have your back every step of the way. That's what Realtors do, because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet. Well, then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.